All right, welcome to the Bobbycast, episode number 7. In this week, recording artist, singer, songwriter, Craig Campbell.
Yeah.
Brought to you this week. It is. It's very catchy. Brought to you this week by no one yet. But I will say this, that I went to New York this past week, and we've been doing this for 6 episodes. This is our 7th episode, Craig. And we really were just doing it from the house because we're like, yeah, we'll put some stuff out. Because people, if on a podcast, they don't have to listen to it. You can always turn it off. There's no ratings involved. With radio, it's like, you got to get to the point. And if you're not to the point, it's got to be super compelling. With this, we can just talk about whatever we want. And so I went up to New York, and they were like, dude, people are playing the Bobbycast like crazy. And so that's when I texted you. I was like, dude, if you're coming, bring in the – come on. Let's do the. So thanks for being here.
No, thank you
appreciate
for having me.
Craig walks in, and he said, hey, I have a gift for you. And I was thinking, oh, cool. He's going to bring me like a T-shirt because I wear my Craig Campbell for President T-shirt sometimes. Yeah. It's like Craig Campbell 2016 for president. And so he brings me in a McPherson guitar. And I was like, dang, dude. But that's like one of the nicest gifts anyone's given me.
Like I said, you know, I'm a part of the McPherson family, and I talked to those guys up in Wisconsin, and I said, you know, Bobby Bones, the Raging Idiots, we need to get them to be part of the family. And
how do you get to be part of a family like that?
You know, it's funny. I just straight up cold called. I sent an email to I say it was a cold call. I got the email from a mutual friend, and I said, hey, I'm so-and-so. I've had, you know, Family Man was on the radio.
So you kind of give them your resume. You say, yeah. I'm an artist. I've got a couple things.
I said, I'd love to be playing the McPherson guitars, and I got a response of, what's your address?
So this is Family Man was, like, what year was this song?
That was, it came out 2010 and peaked April 2011.
This is Family Man here. This is what got him the McPherson guitar deal.
It did. Driving on, the drive behind my coming home, the living, breathing
reason that I am a family man. What I want to do, since Craig Campbell's here, is I just want to start with today and kind of make a circle and come all the way back to today and then just kind of talk about life and music and kind of the revolving door that it is. And so I want to start now with Outskirts of Heaven. So this is a song now that is your current song. Lord, when I die, I want to live on the outskirts of heaven, where there's dirt roads for miles, hay in the fields, and fish in the river. Now, to be totally transparent, and I'm not saying this because you're here, I believe on the air last week, someone had asked me what song do I think doesn't get enough radio play, like of all the songs, and I played that song. I don't know if that stuff ever gets back to you.
Oh, it does. It immediately.
It really. Yeah. I never know. Like, I really don't know what I say if it gets back to artists, and I don't say it so it gets back to artists, if that makes sense. I say it because that's just how I feel.
Yeah.
And so they were like, what's the one song that you think, a listener asked me, isn't getting enough play on the radio that you think really cuts through? And so I said, it's Craig Campbell, Outskirts of Heaven. And I didn't tell you I was going to say that. It's just such a good song. On the outskirts of heaven. And I can tell you, I remember when you sent it to me before it was a single.
Yeah.
And you said, hey, I played this. I think you were playing around in May. I'm just going by memory here. In maybe South Carolina?
Yeah, Charleston.
And so you played it, and you were like, and the crowd got up and cheered. And I listened to it. Can you send me a live version of it? And I was like, I want to get up and cheer right now. I'm laying in my bed. So talk about this Outskirts of Heaven song, because I obviously love it, but I want to know from you kind of your thoughts, your feelings on the song.
Yeah, I mean, when I wrote Outskirts of Heaven, I had no intentions at all I never had radio in mind. It wasn't, you know, because as a songwriter, we that's what we're shooting for. We're thinking, Is this going to be good for radio? Is radio going to like this? Are they going to like it? Do they want to play it? You know, that kind of thing. But when I had this idea for this song, I had radio nowhere in my mind at all. I was writing it for myself. And I had the idea. I told my buddy Dave Turnbull about it, and he says, I want to write that song with you. And we sat down, and I had all the pieces in my head, and he helped me put it all together, and I don't know. I started doing it live and just getting a reaction from people that I'd never gotten before. Speaking of that Charleston show, it was the only standing ovation of the night. It was It was a special moment, and which tells me, I mean, the fans, even though they'd never heard that song, they picked it as the single.
You know, it's weird, and I tell, and you're not a new artist, but I tell new artists, because I'll ask, hey, what do I need to do to get on the radio? And I say, it's not Chase Radio. Because unless you're one of the big seven, and you're automatically going to get on the radio, if you're chasing radio, you're never going to catch it. Because you don't know where it's going. It's like technology.
Yeah.
You don't know what's going to be in 2 years, so what do you invest in when it comes to music playlist? You just don't know what it's going to be. And so when I heard it, I was like, I think my response to you was, this sounds like a Craig Campbell song, finally.
You did. That was the greatest compliment you could have given me.
And so you have it. And it seems like, and I knew it would be, and I think you did too, you knew it would be difficult, especially at first, to get this song to cut through because of the pace of the song.
Absolutely.
Which is the thing in radio now, and it's not as bad as it used to be. When we first started, you couldn't get a ballad on the radio to save your life. And now there are a lot of ballads, but still, it's tough to get any sort of song to cut through. So what's the biggest issue right now with the song that you hear, the reason it's not climbing as fast as you'd want it to?
Oh,
because everybody's got an excuse.
Hey, and I'm getting a lot of excuses. There's honestly the radio stations that are playing it at a good spot. They are getting extremely great feedback.
It's a fantastic song.
It's what we thought was going to happen.
Right.
The stations that aren't playing it, they're saying, okay, it's summertime. It's too slow.
Really, that's just an excuse. And this could be in my stations too. That's just an excuse.
And there's a couple of stations that say, you know, we're going for that P1 demographic, the 18 to 20 whatever year old girls, and we don't think this is going to resonate with those girls or that demographic. Which I have evidence on that's false as well. But it's, you know, we're getting all these kind of excuses. But I feel like this song is tough. It's going to poke through.
Can I tell you, just talking about excuses, and I'll just go to another artist. So. And I've told the story before, but it's one of my better... Is that your water or is this my water? Which one's yours?
Yours is on the ground.
Okay. So it's one of my better stories of hearing excuses about songs. And so, and it's been written and said by me 100 times. But for the sake of this, Cam came into our studio and she had a different song. They brought a new single to the show. And she came in and she's like, I'm going to bring this new single. And she played it. I remember what it was. I don't remember the single that she came in. And Cam started as our jingle singer on our show. Like she was, and she still sings our jingles now, just because Cam's so cool.
Yeah,
I don't know. Do you know Cam very well?
Yeah, yeah. We've hung out a few times. She's one of
like it, she's like
she's
the
one
most,
of my favorites.
She's just such a down chick. Like she's just one of the people.
Yeah,
and so she still sings our jingles for us, even though she doesn't have to. So she comes in and her first song. Man, I even forget what that one was. Just another heartbreak and dead. Just another
one. My mistake.
My mistake,
yeah.
Okay, so it didn't do well, right? She comes in with a second song. I don't remember what it was because I guess I'm a big jerk, and I love Cam. And I was like, hey, play Burning House on acoustic. And so her and her band, and fantastic, they play Burning House. And I was like, okay, I'm moved. Like, I'm moved.
As you should have been,
And it's hard for me to be moved because I'm jaded by everything because I get to hear everything. And so for things to affect me, it's tough because when you get to do everything, it's hard to be affected.
Right.
I was like, God, so good. So she left. And without their knowledge that I was going to do it, I played it like 4 times that day. And it went to number one on iTunes. So that day, an hour later, they switched singles. Like they called and said, we're switching singles because of what had happened. And I was like, wow, that's great. But then the pressure lies on me. It was like, oh boy, I just made them switch a single. Not really on me, but I really love the song, and I just feel like if I can give the audience my honest truth, even if it's not the truth, that's what I say. Sometimes my truth is not exactly the truth, but it is how I feel. And if I can give them my truth, then I've done all I can do. And I played it. And do you know how many stations said that song? We're never going to play it. A ton. We're never going to play this song.
Yeah.
It's one, it's a female. Two, it's too slow. Three, I mean, the whole station stops because it's too slow. But what happened was the message slowly trickled. The sales happened. On the Verge happened. Which, by the way, there's another story about you being on the Verge, which we'll talk about later,
yeah.
Which is one of the craziest stories, too. And it happened, and Burning House happened. And Girl Crush, same thing, happened. And that's just what I hope happens with this song, is because Outskirts of Heaven is so good. Lord, when I die, And I say this and I fight with people a lot. People are always like, well, that ain't country. That is country. To me, there isn't really a definition of what is or isn't country because, listen, I grew up in Arkansas. And when you're our age, too, you're influenced by lots of different kinds of music.
Yeah.
Like, no doubt about it. You got a lot of influence around you. Like, I would say there's newer country and there's more sounding traditional country. But the thing about that song is there's such a place inside of the format for that sounding traditional song.
I feel like it. I feel like there is. I mean, I don't... It, when even when we wrote it, when we dim or went in to track it, make it, you know, make the album, the song itself, I said, hey, this song is about the lyrics and about the melody, but I do want it to hit pretty hard. And I said, but it's going to sound traditional no matter what, just because of the song that it is. But I feel like where we are, and or at least I feel like the Craig truth is that, you know, there's room for every for this as well as anything else.
And also, if you fail with it, that's okay too, because it's you.
Right.
Like, that's how I feel about my stuff is I fail a lot. I try a lot of things that don't work out. Some people don't know about it because it fails and you just don't know. But if you put out something and your heart is really in it and it doesn't work, at least your heart was really in it. Because I know there have been things that I've been, okay, you know, I'll do it. And then it didn't work out. I was like, man, I just wish I would have done it my way and not kind of fall in a certain way because I was told that's what I needed to do. You know, it happened recently, and I'm saving this. Something really frustrating happened in my career in the last, I would say, month or so. And I'm holding on to kind of see where it falls, but I kind of went against my values, not in a like dirty way, but I have what I do where I maintain to myself and I keep all everything kind of on lock. I don't share a lot with people of where I'm going to go and what I'm going to play, who I'm going to back. I don't go to a lot of social events because I don't like to get into the circle of Nashville because it's so buddy-buddy and who do you know and back scratchy. And so I don't do all that. And I got into it a little bit because people were like, hey, you need to start doing this a bit because this is you have the biggest show. And I don't like that I got into that. And some things happened. And eventually it'll come out. It's just a little sensitive right now because I'll end up getting in a lot of trouble. But I hate that about myself. Like, I really. And so I hope that if this song were to die tomorrow, you would still be like, I'm so proud I put that song out.
Well, there's no doubt about it. Okay, let's go back to the initial conversation I had with Benny Brown.
Who owns your label, by the way.
Broken Bow.
Yeah.
And I said, I really need, I don't know what all this means. Like, all this, like the standing ovations and the messages I was getting. I said, I don't know what this means, but I think it means something. And I said, I truly don't know that I could sleep at night knowing that we had this song right here and we didn't go with it. We didn't run with it. And ever since then, it's proven itself. And I'm getting messages. Listen to this. This is crazy. I had a guy, Facebook, man, I get these at least two or three times a week. Pretty much the same, I don't know what you would call it, but same subject matter. I had a guy told me, he started out by saying, you don't know me, but I need you to know that a couple of days ago, I was thinking about killing myself. He said, I just lost my dad, and I didn't like being in this world without him. And he said, I heard Outskirts of Heaven, and it was an immediate peace. I knew that my dad was in the place that you were describing, and he was good. That's, for selfish reasons, I want the song to succeed, because I need, you know, this is my career, but at the same time, this song is special.
Yeah, I love it too, and it's not because you're sitting in front of me. I said it when you weren't in front of me. So we can come back to that. Outskirts of Heaven, I hope you guys download it because, you know, and here's the thing too, radio in general, they look at a lot of research and they research songs, but you know what's a big researcher is people's money, and when people like something, they buy things. People go, huh, they're buying it. Guess they must like it. There's no more better research than buying it. So if you listen to this and you like that song, download it. If you like any song, as a matter of fact, download. Don't stream that crap. The only artists don't get paid crap for streaming.
No, like, we don't.
I mean, listen, it's not, that's the big, that's the, you know, truth. One of my buddies, and I would, you know, I have very few people that I would call like real friends that I call and talk to a couple times a week. You know, we have four or five in our life that we really,
right.
I have a friend named Lee Miller. Lee Thomas Miller is his writing name. I don't know, he's a writer.
We've had, matter of fact, on my second album, we had a song called That's Why God Made a Front Porch.
So you've written with Lee before. Yeah. Like, he is my dude.
I love him.
Like, one of the best humans I've ever met. Yeah. And he is the guy that goes and testifies in front of Congress and says, here's why streaming, we need to be paid for streaming. Here's why we need to pay for it. And, you know, we like are against each other. I'm not against anybody, but it's like I work for radio and, you know, we put, and he's like fighting radio, but then we come and it's, you know, we have our merry, fun ways. But don't stream. My point. Hey, just buy it.
Just buy it. We don't make any money. You guys don't make any money.
No. I've never made, and I'll say this, and you're a real writer. You make songs because you're a writer. That's your career. Like, I never made a penny writing a song, and I've written some songs that have got, like, our Raging Idiots albums have sold like crazy. I ain't made a penny off crap because people don't know what happens with the record. But you take out a loan, basically, whenever you get
a
record.
It's an advance.
They give you money. Explain this. They say, okay, Craig Campbell, we're going to give you a record deal. What happens?
That means they're going to give you the money to make a record, and it's essentially is your money. They're giving it to you early. They're going to give you the money to make a record. They're going to give you the money to pay some people to ride around with you and fly around with you to go to radio stations and say, hey, we need you to play Craig's new song.
And that costs money. All the travel costs money, just like they're making the record.
But like it's the artist's money in advance. So they're basically loaning you your money against yourself that you eventually have to pay back.
So any money that you make with all of your sales, it has to all of it goes to them first until you're caught up even, and then you start to get just pieces of it.
Right.
So for you as an artist, I guess you make your money touring.
Touring is our main money. But if we have songs that do well on the radio that we wrote, we make a decent portion of that. We don't get it all, just a good piece of it.
Are you a guy that do you want all the songs to be your rights, and you don't always maybe get them, the singles, or are you, you know, you'll listen for songs that you like, kind of what's your thing?
Yeah, I love to hear hit songs, no matter who wrote them, and I've always had the belief of the best songs will win. Like, shoot, two of my biggest songs were songs that I didn't write. I didn't write Out of My Head. That's a Cole Swindell song.
Cole Swindell wrote this?
Cole Swindell wrote that.
So when you get a song like this from Cole Swindell, does he sing it?
Did he do the demo? Yeah. When I got the demo, it was him singing, yeah. And I texted him. I said, hey, bro, I said, this song is awesome. He's like, how did you get it? I said, well, I don't know. It just showed up in my email.
Is this a Scotty McCreery song?
Yeah.
Okay, this is a crazy story.
Yeah.
This song was supposed to be sent to Scotty McCreery.
It was already on hold with Scotty.
So Scotty had already said, I would like to put this song on hold. Maybe I'm going to cut
exactly.
it.
Exactly.
So you got it in your email. You weren't supposed to.
Mm-mm.
And you reply back and go, love it.
I love it.
And he's like, it's like when you get a text and you don't know the name on it, the text. And you see a number and you're like, who is this? So you reply back and you say what?
No, me and Cole, we're really good buddies. We've been buddies long, way back when. So when he knew it was me. But I told him, I said, hey, I promise you, I'm going to cut it before Scotty does.
Is that legal?
No. But he gave me his thumbs up.
And so what did McCreery say about that? Because you cut a song out from underneath him. Was there a little tension there?
No. Our folks reached out to his folks and told him, this is our situation. We're going to cut like next week. We want this song. And they were like, you know,
cool with it.
Yeah. They said, we're not going in for another while now. So we're not going to hold this song up.
You know what? That's nice. That's really cool.
Absolutely.
Of them. In this town with fights over songs.
For sure.
That's really cool, that Scotty McCreery camp. So here you go. It's accidentally emailed to you. Wish I could close my eyes and not have to see you smiling. Yeah, can't get you out of my head. When you cut this, do you know it's good?
Well, here's a whole other story. When we went into the studio to cut for the new single from the new album, it was the single from the previous album had died. We needed something new, something fresh. We had a song that we had found that Cole Swindell wrote called My Baby's Daddy. And everybody at my previous record label was extremely pumped about it. So we went in, cut that song first. We cut four more songs. We had time to do one more song. And Keith Stegall, my producer, he said, what do you want to cut? I said, I want to do Out of My Head. You know, that's the one I want.
So this is another last minute where it's like
very last second. Let's just throw it on here. Let's see, you know. And we were tracking it, and it started happening. And Keith, you know, he looks at me and he said, this might be the one.
Really?
Yeah, just like that.
I want to ask about that because a lot of artists say, you know what, it was the last thing that I heard. And I started to think, okay, this just isn't a coincidence. It must just be there's a lot of good stuff out there, and it's just the right time when it's about to wrap, and you get something good right at the right time. More so than it's just lucky that it's just the last thing. What's your thought about, because I hear a lot of artists go, man, we weren't even going to cut the song. And all of a sudden, it's right before we finished up, we wrapped it up, and it was the big hit.
Yeah.
What in your mind, why does that happen?
Well, songwriters, there's a strategy to, if they know when you're going in to cut, they'll send you songs the day before.
Is that right?
Yeah.
I had no idea.
Yeah, they'll send it right before you go in to cut, just because they know sometimes you hear a song and you'll get excited about it. And if you live
with
it.
That's crazy.
Yeah, but it works.
Do you do that to people?
Of course I do.
That's crazy. That's so smart, too. It's like, because I get that way about anything. Like, if I'm like, oh, if something comes to my head and I have this segment idea, and it's hard for me not, if it's, I know I need to wait till Friday for it, and it's like, oh, but I got to do it tomorrow. I just got this great idea. That's such a great freaking play
now,
right
out
there.
Out of my head was not that case. I loved it. It was getting my people over at Bigger Picture to love it. So Keith, he wasn't so hip on it as much as I was. It wasn't like that song was sent to me last second. They just kept pushing it to the side. Oh, you know, it's an okay song. We'll. And then finally there was some time left on the session. I said, I want to cut this song.
Was that your first song that really popped for you to where people were like, okay, I know that song from the radio?
Well, Family Man went to number 12.
Okay. Number 12.
My world revolves around my sacred piece of solid ground. The flesh and bone that gives me strength to stand.
Did you write Family Man?
I did.
Okay, so when you write a song and it ends at 12, like what kind of money comes from a number 12 song? Enough to buy a car?
Yeah.
Yeah, number 12. Who'd you ride with? How many people?
Three people.
You ride with three. It was a four-person ride or a three-person
ride? Three people.
Ride?
No, three.
And
three
that's
total.
And that's about normal then.
Yeah, I mean, most of the songs written in Nashville are three ways.
So if you do Family Man and it hits 12, then that's your biggest at that point. Where did Fish end up?
Fish was an anomaly. It was we didn't even go for ads. It just people started playing.
So this
playing
song was
it.
Never like a song that you went to radio and said, "Hey, start playing it."
Mm-mm.
This is Fish, by the way.
Turns out my baby loves to fish. She wants to do it all the time, early in the morning, in the middle of the night. She's hooked, and now she can't get enough. Man, that girl sure loves to fish.
No, radio was telling us, we're playing that song whether you like it or not.
That's a good problem to have.
It went, this is no joke, I could show you on emails because I kept all the emails. It went from, it debuted 50-something, then it went to 41, and then went to 32. I mean, it leapfrogged the
with
chart.
With no support, no one going, hey, play.
No.
The fact that it charted, and charted is 50. If you hit 50, that's right. That's a chart. The fact that it charted accidentally, it's crazy.
Yeah.
Where did it end up peaking?
It peaked at 23.
That's crazy.
It's my most downloaded song.
Fish is your most downloaded song.
And it peaked
even
at
looking
23.
Back, what year was that?
End of 2011.
And 5 years ago, mm-hmm. Your most downloaded song.
Right.
Okay, so Fish is there. Yeah, Family Man. I feel like I have so many things I want to get to now. So
it was a strange deal that song did so well, but didn't do well on the chart. Like, it's weird to compare Fish to Outskirts of Heaven. But it was the same excitement. We had Fish, I was doing it at the shows, but the album wasn't out yet. People were saying, we got to get our fingers on this song. So we says, well, we got to harness this enthusiasm. So we came with it before the album came out. We decided it should be the second single.
That's a really cool story. Like, you had no idea. That's mm-hmm. like the LFO. You're familiar with Summer Girls, the LFO song?
Yeah.
I like girls that wear Abercrombie and Fitch.
Yeah.
The station in Memphis played it one time. This is before I was like a kid. And one station played it, and they were like, well, we got to play it. Thing, all of a sudden, every once in a while, and each format, you get one of those songs that do that. That really... Like, I've done it with songs, but that was because I'm a big jerk and I like to find my song, just play them over and over again. But man, the fact that just radio, because it's different though, because I have an audience of 5 million people. But for this to happen for you with this song and stations were taking it station by station, it's even a better story.
But when we got to the crunch part of the chart, the I guess you would call them the Bible Belt stations, says, we can't play that.
Because why?
Because of the double entendre, the
What double entendre am I missing here?
I'm with you.
Vagina?
Well, no, the whole had everything we needed in the bed of my truck. Turns out my baby loves to fish.
Hold on.
Turns out my baby loves to fish. She wants to do it all the time, early in the morning.
Are you kidding me? Dude, I'm telling you. I loved it. And even then, I can hear where maybe they could say it was part of it there. My baby likes to be. I would never have thought that, though. Let me listen more. I can't believe that.
No, it was.
Dude,
It hit a brick wall.
If I would have been alive at this point in this format, I'd have been protesting. I'd have been screaming my brains out.
I was selling almost 20,000 a week at 25 on the chart.
I can't believe that's what stopped that song.
I even got my first piece of hate mail over this song.
Like a real letter, I'm assuming.
Yeah,
and what did it say?
What happened? I played it at the Opry. When we decided it was a single, obviously, you know, when we play the Opry, we play the current song. And this lady, and granted, I see what they were saying as far as the difference between Family Man and Fish. She said, you know, we were a big fan. We loved the song Family Man. I brought my kids to see you, and then you played that filth. She was upset about it.
Mike, did you catch that?
I didn't catch it.
I mean, now when you have to explain it, but even then. That makes me kind of
funny. But to this day, I mean, I was pulling my hair out just because I said, okay, you're telling me radio don't want to hear, or people listening to the radio don't want to hear this song, but I'm selling like 20,000 a week.
You're selling it like crazy.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay. So listen to this story, and then I'm going to get into some live stuff. But so you're on a label, and you have this song called Keep Them Kisses Coming, and your label at the time was called
Bigger Picture.
Bigger Picture. It doesn't exist anymore, by the way, but. Like, I love the song when it came out. I was like, man, this song's fun. It's a beat. It's cool. It's country. It's Craig. I didn't really know you that well then, but I'm like, dude, you got to come to the studio, you know? And so your label disappears.
Yeah.
And so
we're on the verge.
We as a company go, we got to put Craig, this is an on the verge song. What it means is my company, and I'm biased as crap, but and I chose to work for my company. I love iHeartRadio. And it was like, we get to pick something that we think is going to blow up. So let's just get on board with a product that we think is already fantastic. And so, boom, that's it. You're on the verge.
The first one.
And his label.
Maiden Voyage.
His label folds as you're the on the verge artist.
Number 13 on the chart. I get a phone call saying, hey, you're going to see the press release tomorrow, but well, we're closing our doors.
So here you are.
And it was smoking up the chart.
And you don't have a record label.
No.
And I remember talked to you like, dude, what are you going to do? So I guess you like hired an outside promoter someone did?
No, honestly, the guys that worked for Bigger Picture continued to call and make calls as well as myself. I started calling people that I knew in radios, yourself included, saying, hey, you know, even though the record label's closed, this is a hit. You know, I'm still out here working. Let's keep it going. And for the most part, radio was very receptive to that. Like, dude, we got you.
And it was almost like we wanted you to win because we saw something. It just got swept right out from underneath you.
Yeah. And I remember, though, getting the phone call from one of our guys that was working the record. They were not allowed to log into MediaBase anymore, so they couldn't see who was up.
MediaBase is what shows the charts, by the way, for everybody listening. It shows you where songs are ranked and how many spins it's getting all over the country.
Yeah, they can look at specific stations and see where, if you're losing spins, they can find out where they're going, where they're getting lost. So they couldn't even see. They were flying blind, basically. So I was having other record promo guys send me screenshots of the ups and down spins, because I said, you know, if they're down five or more, let me know so I can call them and say, man, we're still here. Let's go. And fortunately, with the help of the guys that was working the song with Bigger Picture, we We kept it going for another six spots.
And so it ended up peaking where?
Seven.
With no record label.
No record label.
I can remember sitting in New York at a table, and I remember texting you, and I'm sitting with Tom Pullman, who's the president of all of iHeart, all of the formats. And so, like, Rod Phillips is my boss.
Right.
He's head of country. And Rod's boss is over all the formats. And I remember sitting with Tom, like, what are we going to do? Like, both of us are like, what are we going to do? And we're staying at this charity event. It's like, man, pedal to the metal. Like, this is our dude. Let's do it. And without a record label for, like, another month and a half.
Yeah.
I hope you're proud of that. And you know what? I think it's the number one song that you just got screwed out of.
Oh, I believe it. I believe it. It was the metrics on the song, the downloads, the way it was moving and people adding it and converting it at radio, it was moving too fast for it not to peak at number one. I even sent a text message to Clay Hunnicutt, who was
Rod before Rod.
Yeah.
Right.
And I felt bad that had happened on the very first On the Verge. I felt like I let Clay down. And he's like, dude, you didn't have any, that wasn't your fault. But I still felt a little responsible on behalf of Bigger Picture that they, for lack of a better, couldn't hold it together long enough to see it through.
On that label at that time, who else was on Bigger Picture?
We had...
I know Lucy Hale was there.
Lucy Hale, but that was a Disney partnership.
Yes, a partnership. Because I just remember her coming in and her being... who else was on Bigger Picture?
Jansen. Chris Jansen.
That's right. Chris Jansen was on it.
I think Chris Cagle had already separated, went his own way. They were developing Smithfield.
Yeah. Which now they're starting to kind of pop up again.
Yeah. I think that's it.
But it was you.
Yeah.
You were the leader of that label. And then Jansen had Better I Don't. And it had done okay. And then he got dropped for a long time.
Right.
And then the whole Buy Me a Boat story is a whole different anomaly of what happened there. Wow. That losing your record label at the height of your career is a crazy story.
It was a very deflating. I didn't see it coming at all. Well, I mean, in retrospect, I saw signs of struggles, you know, financial struggles. I knew something was shaky. I didn't know it was enough to shut down though, especially knowing seeing the finish line. You know what I'm saying?
Like could actually see the big success revving up front.
Right. And obviously having a hit song and following it up with another song, we felt like the momentum, the train was strong. So I was super shocked.
So I do know for a while, like as we get away from music for a second, you used to work in a jail. Oh, there's a difference in a jail and a prison. Which did you work?
Prison.
Oh, you worked in the real deal.
Yeah.
As what?
I was a correctional officer.
You were a correctional officer for a male prison.
Yes.
Which prison?
The first prison I worked at was down in Glenville, Georgia.
How'd you get that job?
My stepdad, he was very connected with the Georgia Department of Corrections. He was the maintenance foreman, basically took care of all the trooper vehicles, the farm, the tractors. He was a fairly big deal at the prison, not far from our house. And then my uncle, my daddy's brother, he was head of security, like head of training for the whole entire state of Georgia. So they were hiring like crazy anyways, but it was cool to go in and say, hey, I'm Wayne Campbell's son. So I got stationed at a prison about 30 miles from my house.
What's it like your first day going into a prison?
Oh, it's.
Is it intimidating?
It is, absolutely. Especially, I was 18 years old.
So you go in at 18, you're a prison guard, you're automatically hated?
No, honestly, I mean, there's a misconception with prison. The inmates have a job and have a role, as well as the correctional officers. For the most part, I would say 90% of the people in prison, they just want to have a smooth existence. They don't want to cause any trouble.
Was there any trouble while you were working?
I never saw any hardcore trouble. I did see a few fights.
Which is probably natural when you just get a group of people together.
You get a bunch of dudes that live together and they see each other every day, and there's not many resources or no outlets or whatever. But so it's just things are going to come to a head.
Were there like shanks and stuff all around?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we found those, but after working there for a while, I realized that most of the things that we found during searches and whatnot were there for us to find so that we wouldn't find the big stuff.
Is that right? Kind of throw you off the scent.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. We'd find a what we called buck. It was basically a milk jug or a bladder full of homemade whiskey. But that was just to throw you off so you wouldn't find the big stash.
Was there ever a time where you felt, as you were working inside the prison, where you were really vulnerable? Maybe you put yourself into a position that was too vulnerable for being there at that time.
There was one guy that I wouldn't say I was his friend, but he was into R&B. He loved to sing. He was singing all the time, and I loved it. So we'd sing in the hallways. We'd go out into the hallway and just shoot. You know, he'd sing some Boys to Men, and I'd join in, sing harmony with him. So we hit it off. I think there might have the relationship might have been too close for inmate officer. You know, because I liked him. I mean, he was in there. It was a very low security prison, so he couldn't have been in there for nothing too bad. So my guard was down, but I enjoyed hanging out with him. But you know,
never did anyone like corner you or try.
No, I had one guy one time, and I remember this because it was the only time he was being disrespectful to me, and that's the whole key. I feel like when you work at a prison, you just got to maintain respect for those guys. They'll respect you because of the badge. But there was one guy, he was giving me all kinds of grief and just wouldn't do what he was supposed to be doing. And I, man, honestly, back 18, 19 years old, I was 125 pounds, just this 5'8", you know, little bitty dude, barely could grow a mustache. And I bowed up at him. I says, man, if you for 1 minute think that I can't handle myself, you are mistaken. And from that point forward, we had the greatest relationship.
So because you stepped to him,
I was scared to death. Right. But I separated him from the general population. Obviously, you don't confront a man in front of his friends, because then you know he's not going
to
have
he
that.
He has to show.
So I said, let's follow me, and we talked, and I said, and that's when I said, if you think I can't handle this. That's the biggest mistake you're going to make.
So at 18 years old, and how long did you work at the prison?
I would say 2.5 years.
Were you playing music to make money as the beginning part of a career then, or was that still just kind of a dream that you wanted to try later?
Well, I wasn't playing music yet.
So no music?
No, I was basically just, on the weekends, I'd go to a bar and try to find a band I could sit in with.
But the thing is for you, because I know you started playing young.
Yeah,
started playing piano, what, 19 years old, something like that?
Well, I played piano for my church from the time I was, I don't know, 9 years old.
How at 9 do you start playing piano for your church?
They didn't have anybody else.
And so did you start taking lessons when you were way young? Did you have a grandma that taught you?
I took lessons for a minute. And the story my mama tells me is that the teacher came to them after about 3 or 4 lessons and said, listen, this is you wasting your money. He's not learning anything. He's memorizing it. So I would remember where my hands go as opposed to knowing what I'm reading. So she said, all he wants to do is learn how to play songs. She said, I'm going to teach him 3 or 4 songs to play at church. And that was it. And then the church, the piano player quit, and I was the closest thing they had to a piano player. So
you're 10 years old, and you're the church pianist.
Sunday morning, Sunday night, Wednesday night, revival.
Really?
Vacation Bible school. I was the guy.
So are you learning, though, at 10, 11, 12 years old?
Oh, yeah.
So that was the real learning for you.
It went from hunting and pecking, like ding, ding,
yeah.
You know, to literally, you know, being able to carry on a full service of.
And I've said this about you before because I've seen you play, and a lot, and I think it's tell me if I'm wrong, I think it's a couple of things. I think you were grinding a long time, and as you grind, you learn and you pick up.
Or you have to.
And on top of that, there's some sort of musical intuition inside of you, too, that you can figure things out as you go, and the really great ones have a combination of both. And I think as far as musician-wise, you're one of the really great ones, and I'll talk about why coming up in a bit. But when you sit down and you hear a song, how do you figure it out? Do you see colors? Do your hands fall to a certain place? Because every artist has a different way that they go, okay, I'm hearing this song. Let me chase down.
Well, I've heard John Mayer
see colors.
He sees colors. Right. I don't see colors at all. I do hear numbers or see numbers. Like I can hear it and say, oh, that's a 6 minor or 2 minor, you know, and that's the Nashville
You
way.
Can hear it
yeah.
and go, I know what that is.
That's as long as you tell me what key it's in, I could play it by the number system.
So you're learning to play piano through these years. At what point, you're 10, you're playing through church, you never think this is what I want to do or I'm going to really do it. Is that because of where you live and there just weren't a lot of people that were doing it? Because right. I know for me, that's why I never thought I could do anything because nobody else did it.
Yeah, when I graduated high school, the prison, that was it.
It was like the sawmill in my town. Like yeah. you worked at the sawmill when you finished high school.
And I had a girlfriend that we were high school sweethearts. I got the job at the prison. The first thing I did was go and buy an engagement ring. So we were engaged because it was the thing to do. And whenever I quit that was when I said, you know what? Because there was a club in my hometown that I went to often.
In what part of Georgia?
South Georgia, a little town called Lyons, Georgia.
Lyons, Georgia.
There's a little club called Kerrigan's Country, and it was a 6-night-a-week full live band. 6 nights a week.
So there was music playing, or for you, there was a 6-night-a-week gig?
No. There was music. There was a live band Monday through Saturday every week. So I could go at any time and see live music.
Right.
And that's when I say, like, when I would leave the prison, I would go to town and who I don't care who it was. I was going to ask, can I get up and sing a song? I became buddies with the owner, and I told him, I said, hey, if I put a band together, will you let me play here? And he said, yeah. He said, just... You have to come show me what you got first. I'm not just going to clear my schedule. So we came up, we practiced for about 4 weeks and came in on a Thursday night, and he told the band and let us get up and play all their instruments.
Who's with you, by the way, in the band? Like, what, did you grab some friends from home?
No, we were all local. There's a guy playing guitar. His name's James Watkins. He lives here now. I think the last I heard, he was playing for Steve Holy. That was a few years ago.
So these are guys, though, that you kind of just knew around town. Said, hey, yeah. let's get together. We can go at least make a little bit of money.
Yeah, and then the bass player, he was just a buddy we knew, Chris O'Neill. He lived in Vidalia. He knew a drummer, so he's like, let's do this. And so, yeah, we put together a little set list, and we came in and played that night. And the owner, Gary, he said, all right,
what does that mean?
Be back Monday morning.
So you go back Monday thinking what?
We had made it.
You had made it as what? Like you're going to just play Monday? Or
no,
like
no.
You were going to be that band?
He cleared his schedule. And
why? So the other bands got fired?
He different bands every week.
Oh, okay. So you went in and you had 1 week then?
Yeah, yeah.
So you played for a week.
And then he gave me the next week. And then he gave me what ended up being 13 solid straight weeks of playing. 6 nights
man,
a week.
Man, I bet that was just heaven, right?
Oh, man.
Because you were actually making money doing something
at home.
You love.
Yeah.
And I can relate on such a level, and it's funny because I was talking with some friends. We played a show, and we played Springfield, Missouri, then we played Tulsa. And we were going to fly back from Tulsa, and we're like, screw it, let's just get a car, we'll just drive back, 10 hours. And the great thing about having people in a band that you enjoy is that the enjoyment of just the fellowship. And inside of our group, I get to have people that I really enjoy because I get to control it. And listen, right. We're not winning. We're not Craig Campbell. We're not good, but we put on a really entertaining show. Yeah, it's nuts.
Whatever.
Right?
Yeah, you can say that, but I've heard. I cannot wait to see you guys. I've heard it is a blast, and I'm looking forward to it.
It's like a dumpster fire with fireworks. Like you can't stop looking at it. And listen, we've gotten better. But my point is, even with the morning show, I surround myself with people that I enjoy being around. The same thing with this band. And I'm talking with, I don't know if you know Brandon Ray at all. Mm-mm. Okay, so he's a new artist, and he's been playing a few songs with us. And we were talking, and I was like, you know, for me, I grew up super humble, like a lot of us did. I grew up, you know, I didn't have any money. I was a welfare kid, a food stamp kid, you know, I didn't have a dad. I've told the story 100 times. But I was like, in a way, I look at that as a blessing. Because I knew how to be poor. And for me to do what I loved to do, I had to be poor for a long time. So when I got my first radio job, when I was a teenager, and I was making, I don't even think it was minimum wage, frankly, because it, you know, sometimes you just didn't pay minimum wage. It was just a radio station. That I already knew how to be poor, But I loved what I was doing so much
Amen.
That I was able to be poor and do what I loved, and that's all that mattered. And because I loved it so much, I worked so much harder at it, and that allowed me to slowly climb that ladder. And I wonder, as you tell this story, it's almost like I'm, if it makes sense, listening to a mirror, because I know you're not making any money really playing these weekly. You make a little money. You're right. Making tip money, but it's not like you're making money that you can do this till you're 50 years old at this point.
Right.
But you have to be loving it, right?
You have to. And that's, you know, I've even to where I am today, I have people ask me all the time, like, man, they get so frustrated because they haven't made it. And I'm like, okay, well, are you having fun, you know, playing whatever on Lower Broadway? Are you having fun doing it? Man, it's just, you know, I get tired of playing every night. Well, don't do it if you're not having a good time.
I find it's that they see other people doing other things and they wish they could do that instead of just, and we're all guilty of this at some point. But if they see people around them doing bigger things, they think, why can't that be me? But you know what? Those people who are making it now at one point were the same person
exactly.
Looking at other people going, why can't that be me? And it's really rare that that doesn't happen to someone. So back to you, you're playing 13 weeks in a row and you got to be like, this is it.
This is awesome.
Like, I'm playing music and I'm paying my bills.
Yeah.
Like, what greater thrill to do something that you love and to support yourself by doing something. Because most people, we're lucky, dude. Most people hate their jobs. Most people in life hate their jobs.
Yeah, I believe that.
My stepdad hated his job. Worked at a sawmill. Hated his job every day. Came home, was always like, I hate this job. But he did it so we could eat.
Right.
And he hated his job, but he did it for us. I never hated my job. Like, I had jobs when I was younger, when I golf course maintenance or, you know, when I worked at the marina, but I loved my job even when I was there. Now you're loving your job and you're playing music every night. And so when do you go, okay, I think I'm ready to try something a little bigger than this?
We had a guitar player. He quit once, and then he went to another regional band, and then he came back to us, and we did that, and then he quit again. And when a band member quits in this situation, wherever you're doing a regional stuff and you're playing six nights a week, it's very rehearsed. Like the sets, you play five sets a night, 40-minute sets. Each set has its transitions and this and that. And I said, you know what? I don't want to have to learn. I don't want to have to teach a new guitar player the set. I just don't want to do it. So I called my buddy. And he said he was going through a hard time. He was already living in Nashville. I said, hey, do you have any room? He says, man, I'm sorry. I can't, not, nothing right now. He said, but if I can get you a job, will you move? And I was like, shoot, yes.
A job?
Yeah.
Like a...
He was working maintenance at an apartment complex.
Okay.
He says, I think I know somebody across the way that is looking for maintenance/groundskeeper. I said, dude, hook me up.
For an apartment complex?
Yeah.
Okay.
So I came to town on a Thursday. My interview was on Friday.
How old were you?
23.
You come to town to Nashville with music in your head, but you know you have steps to before you can even get to the music. Okay, so you're going to work, for lack of a better term, just maintenance, like I said.
Yeah.
So you're going to work maintenance in an apartment complex. You interview?
I interview. She calls me back that afternoon and says, we want to hire you. She said, I know you don't know much about maintenance, because I was honest. I said, I've never done this. She said, but I can tell that you want this job. She said, so I want you to have this job, like $8.25 an hour. But I did get, you know, 30% off my rent, which was a big deal.
Yeah.
So I did that probably 15 months.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
And so at that time, are you playing the Broadway gigs?
No, I haven't started Broadway.
So you were in Nashville for a year and you hadn't started playing music yet. Was it driving you crazy?
It was, just because I didn't know anybody. I was very secluded. But I would go downtown to Lower Broadway into Printer's Alley, and I would watch bands and just think, man, I want to do this. And this is another level of making it, you know.
Was it intimidating for you? Because when people come to this town, they always think, I'm good. And then you look around.
It was very intimidating.
You look around and you go, holy crap. These are people playing bars and they're fantastic.
Right. This is the melting. This is the concentration of amazingness. So this, as luck would have it, I was at a showcase one night at Douglas Corner. And there was a guy. He had the Saturday night 10 to 2 spot at the stage, which was the
the big place to go down Lower Broadway.
And the 10 to 2 spot on Saturday night was the spot you wanted. It's packed.
I mean, it's shoulder to shoulder.
So I met him, and he's like, what do you do? I said, I'm a piano player. He said, really?
So that's what you were at the time. You were the keys player.
Well, it was just easier for me to say that than to say a singer.
Even a guitar player, because everybody does both.
So he says, what are you doing Saturday? I said, I ain't got nothing to do. He said, come down Saturday night and set up.
That's interesting, because you were a singer and you did play guitar, but you knew that there was...
To get my foot in the door.
That your piece was to play the keys.
Because there were no piano players downtown.
Wow. So, okay, there are no piano players. You go and he says, come play. So what happens?
So halfway through the night, his name's Josh Brister. He said, the gig is yours if you want it. Every Saturday night.
So you played halfway. You played half a set, and he comes to you and says, hey, you're in. And so, is it a thrill for you to be playing in Nashville?
My goodness, man. To be able to play music and make $100 or however much you make on a Saturday night, 10 to 2 spot, singing harmony with a rocking crowd, it was the best thing ever.
Were you still doing the maintenance in the daytime?
Yeah.
You'd probably maybe get a nap
And I was on call every other weekend. So sometimes I would be on Broadway with my pager on, sweating, thinking if I get a call.
You ever get a call during a show?
I would have to go make sure. Most times I could talk people out of it.
You could give them instructions on how to save themselves.
Or I could just say, hey, can it wait till tomorrow? The only thing I couldn't say wait is if it was a one bedroom and there was a clogged toilet.
Did you ever have to leave a gig?
Nope.
Had to leave a gig.
I did have to make a few phone calls, but never had to leave a gig.
So you do that gig that you playing keys on the stage for how long?
I did that for 3 or 4 years. I played piano. It was like a domino effect. I played for him. And then the Saturday night 6 to 10 guy said, hey, I need a piano player. So I would come in on Saturday, set up at 6 o'clock, and play both shifts and wouldn't even have to tear my stuff down. I'd just
leave it up.
Play both shifts. And then that went that Friday night. And then at one time I was playing 6 nights and 2 shifts on Friday, Saturday.
So
I was honestly making about $1,000 a week cash.
Okay, so you're making good money. Were you able to quit your maintenance job at that point? So you quit and you were just playing piano keys, whatever.
Right.
So that's what you're doing. You're the keys guy. Now, do you feel like, okay, now I can really sing?
No. Yeah, that was my whole goal the whole time, my plan. I became, buddy with the owner at the stage, and I kept, every time I'd see him, I'd say, when you going to give me a shift? When you going to give me a shift? Because during sound check, I would sing to check, make sure everything's working. And they knew. They recognized. And so one night I overheard him saying, man, I don't have a 10 to 2 for Sunday. And I'm like, I'm here. He's like, you sure? I said, yes. So he gave me 10 to 2 on a Sunday, which is very... No, it's not the best
10 p.m. 2 a.
Right.
Okay.
Late at night on a Sunday.
Right.
But I showed up with a 7-piece band. I was so excited. I had
Beethoven Symphony with you, dude.
Yeah. Even though I was a piano player, I hired a piano player.
Right.
Bass, fiddle, steel, drums, guitar. I had the whole thing, and it was just another one of those I've made it situations. But I never got my shift. I never got my own shift till a good bit after that. That was just a one-off. But I just kept on, and finally he said he needed somebody for Tuesday night, 6 to 10 at the stage. It's not a permanent thing, but I want you to, whenever they're out, I'm going to give you the call first. I said, thank you. It eventually turned into those guys, they kept canceling. So he gave the shift to me, and I did that for another 3 or 4 years.
Years. Wow. So as you're working at stage, were there people that came through and you saw come through and then go up? Meaning, can you think back to anyone you were like, okay, this guy's really good, and they ended up being something that came through?
Dirks was down there.
Dirks would come and play the stage.
He played the stage for a little bit.
Was he at that point special, or did he become special later, do you think?
I never really got to see him play. I just would hear stories about this Dierks Bentley guy, and he wasn't there long. I mean, like, he was in and out. Like he they gave him a shift, and then I think he signed his record deal.
So you play keys, and at one point you started playing keys for Luke. Now, before we hit Luke, did you play? Did you go on the road and travel with anybody before Luke Bryan, or was Luke still so young and new that he was just a guy?
It was before he had his record deal. Yeah.
So, okay, so you were playing with Luke before record deal, Luke Bryan. So how did you guys even meet? Who set you guys up?
We had a mutual songwriting friend, and his name was Galen Griffin, and he had told, or he had overheard Luke saying they needed a piano player for some weekend stuff, and he threw my name in the hat. I met Michael Carter, who was Luke's guitar player. He was also now he's Cole Swindell's producer and songwriter. And we talked on the phone, and he says, "Hey, let's do this." And they were like, "Hey, you guys will hit it off. They're from Georgia. Y'all gonna love each other." So they hired me without even ever hearing me play. Went down, and it was, you know, a couple of college towns. But that was one of those when I got to do the shows with Luke, I knew immediately that he was on his way.
So you could tell with Luke even early that he was special?
Oh, yeah, no doubt.
Why?
Because, I mean, first of all, his stage presence is the same as it's always been. I mean, he is that guy. And we would do these shows in these college towns, and I was blown away. Like, they give me a CD to learn these songs, and I'd never heard these songs before. But we'd go down and play Milledgeville, and we'd go down and play Statesboro, Georgia, and we play Athens, Georgia, and it would be completely sold out. Everybody's singing every single word to every song he sang. I'm talking about all of his original songs. I'm like, how's he doing this? How did he do this? But it was a big deal back then.
The thing about Luke too, and I like Luke, and I just to preface this, he's a good dude, and you expect someone that big maybe not to be that, you know, kind of lose it a bit. Luke's a good dude. He's a good dude. And so you just wouldn't expect Luke to, and I've seen him do it before, alone, sit down at a piano.
Oh, he's great.
And just, and people will give Luke crap sometimes because he gets up and dances and he'll dance and he'll do some Macklemore. But sit that guy down at a piano and have him play. Yeah, it's beautiful.
Next time you have him on a piano, tell him to render you some gospel songs.
And he's played gospel songs.
He'll get it.
It's everything that you want him to be but don't expect him to be, and then he is, and you're like, wow.
Yeah.
So you play with Luke. Now, were you with him when he got a deal? Or were you gone by that point?
No. He had already decided I didn't need to be a side man.
So he decided, did he fire you?
In a way.
In a good way or a bad way?
A good
way.
No, it was great. He says, man, I want to help you.
Did you believe him?
I mean, I had no other reason. I had no reason not to.
Because someone says to me, "Hey, I'm gonna fire you," but in a good way, I'm be like, "Oh, come on, it's not a good way."
It was all immediate. I mean, one of them was like, "Hey, I want to help you. I want to introduce you to my publisher."
Okay, so he really like led to you in a direction.
Yeah,
that's cool.
So he invited me to town. Me and Michael, his guitar player at the time, we started writing together, and those were some of my first co-writes. He introduced me to a guy named John Mabe. Who was married to Connie Harrington. She wrote a bunch of big songs, Terry Clark, yada, yada, and then I Drive Your Truck. And before I met Connie, he introduced me to John. And John said, "Well, it's funny, you know, meeting you today," he said, "my wife Connie needs a demo singer for a song." This is years ago. And he said, "Are you available?" I said, "Yeah." So he hooked me up with Connie. Connie, my very first paid demo.
What was the song? Remember?
Somebody's Somebody.
Somebody's Somebody. What was that song?
It never got caught.
Okay, because I'm thinking, and I don't want to be dumb, and I just don't know it. Okay.
Honestly, there's no songs I've ever done gotten cut except for one.
That you demoed?
That I sang.
And what was that one?
It was a song called Braid My Hair that Randy Owen did. For St. Jude.
Randy from Alabama. Yeah, yeah. I even know the song. He sings it whenever I go to St. Jude and he's there.
Yeah, I demoed that song.
Wow. Okay, so you're a demo singer. So here you are. You're moving up the ladder. When do you start to get sniffed from labels?
Oh, that wasn't until after the whole Tracy Byrd thing.
Okay, so you play keys for Tracy Byrd.
Yeah.
So how did that end up happening?
His tour managers house sitter was good friends with my wife. And once again, it was one of those, she overheard Tracy needing a piano player. And they hired me, gave me some CDs to learn, and never auditioned or anything. Just got on the bus one night, did three shows, and on the way home, they says, you want the gig? It's yours.
What was the highlight of your first Tracy Byrd show?
Oh, the highlight was when I messed up big time. Like they did this Ricky Skaggs song, and there's a da 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 ba da bump. It stops, but I let it sustain over the entire. It was just
held it.
Yeah, I held out, and everybody else stopped, and they all looked at me. And that's my one memory from the very first Tracy Byrd show.
So from Tracy Byrd, when did you go, okay, I want to grab a guitar? And I want to be an artist. I want to be solo artist.
I'm doing this all on Lower Broadway at the same time.
Okay, and this is when you're grinding, because you can play. The thing with Craig, too, by the way, is that we've been in the show thing for years, is that I would just throw a song at him, and Craig knows every song, because you kind of had to when you would play for hours at a time, right?
Right.
So and if you didn't, you have to figure it out really quick.
Yeah, you do four hours of music, and then, you know, the occasional $20 tip comes in for a song you never heard. You go home and learn it just in case it gets called again, you know, or requested. But I'm playing Lower Broadway all the while doing the Tracy Byrd thing, too. So there was a bartender at the stage where I played. She was dating a guy that was in the radio promo business. And she invited him down. She said, you need to come see this guy. And he came down. And he would come down every Tuesday night for probably 2 years. Always telling me, hey, we're going to do something. You're great, yada, yada, all that. And I had gotten to the point where I'm like, okay, put your money where your mouth is.
Because you've heard it so many times, so many people.
Yeah, so one night he came, he's like, look, we're ready to do this. We want you to be our guy. I'm going to bring Keith Stegall down to see you.
Who's that?
He's a producer. He produced all the Alan Jackson stuff, all the Zac Brown stuff. And honestly, he was number one on my list. If I could handpick producers when I first moved to town, he was my guy. And I couldn't believe it. I said, well, at least give me 24 hours notice so I can prepare. So sure enough, he says, hey, we'll be down this date. We're going to be there from 7 to 8. I said, all right, I'll be ready. So I hit him with 45 minutes of everything I had, and Keith said, come by the office tomorrow. And
what's everything you have? Is it your originals? You throw a couple covers
in there? Yeah, no, I didn't do any covers.
So you did all original songs?
All originals.
Could you tell by his face? Because, you auditioned, and I've auditioned for acting jobs and hosting jobs, and you watch the faces. Were you watching his mannerisms?
Oh, yeah.
And how were you feeling as it was happening?
He was, and now that I've known him for a little while, he was as excited as he would have ever gotten, which at the moment was kind of not the best facial expressions you would expect, you know, for somebody that was excited about seeing some music that they were wanting to do something with. So I didn't know how to take it, but when he invited me to the office the next day, that was a good sign. And that was in August of 08.
So you signed a record deal.
Signed a deal in September 11th, 2009. So it took a year to negotiate. And then started the record, making the record, and then started my radio tour July 2010. And then Family Man came out.
And so your first song was Family Man.
Yeah. They're the world,
my world revolves around. Exciting to hear it on the radio the first time?
Oh, my goodness. I mean, it's not just the first time. It's every time I hear my song. But the first time you hear your song on an unsolicited, you know.
Where it's not like we're about to play it.
Right.
Thanks for coming to the
exactly.
station. Yeah.
It was pretty cool. They're the world my world revolves around. My sacred
piece of solid ground. The flesh and bone that gets. You mentioned earlier the Cole Swindell thing. Is the Cole Swindell link because him and Luke were working together? He was like working for Luke. Or did that come to a different plan?
No, but when Cole moved to town, he wasn't doing merch for Luke. Or wait. Okay, I don't know the timeline for Cole, but I do know that when Cole first moved to town, we met immediately. I think it was through Luke and through Michael Carter, and we hit it off, and we hung out. We hung out a lot.
So you have a deal, you have a song. Do you think, and Family Man peaked, where did it peak? 12,
yeah.
So it peaked at 12. Do you think, okay, I got this now? Like,
oh, man.
You're like, I figured it out. Like, it's this
absolutely.
Easy.
Yeah, say nothing.
And as I ask you right now, do you think you have it figured out?
Oh, no. No, that was... It's very humbling to see your first song do extremely well and then the second song do what Fish did and have almost a 500,000 downloads, you know, and then the third song not do well at all.
And third song would be?
When I Get It, You'll
Get It. When I get it, you get it.
And so the song did not do well.
It went to 38.
So it goes to 38 and you start to think, man, this is an anomaly that I'm not hitting it, or is it realization of maybe it's not as easy as I thought it was?
That was it. It was one of those... Man, you know, because people ask me all the time, man, how did you get your record deal? And my response is, that's the easy part. Keeping it is the hard part, you know.
Are you making money inside your deal to live a life where you can actually, like, afford a truck and a house payment? Or is it still a struggle? It's even more of a struggle because now you've got money to pay back.
Me and my wife, we do well. I make enough money for us. She's making money too with her personal training, but we are able to take care of ourselves and our family and the needs we have. But if you were to ask me, am I ready for retirement? I would say no. You know what I mean?
You still love going on stage?
I love it.
I mean, it's
yes.
'Cause I still love going on the radio and I do it every day. Like, I live for going on the air, and I live for going on the stage and doing stand-up comedy. Like, those, I get some, I do it all, and it's a thrill.
Yeah, me too.
And that's how I know that's what I'm supposed to be doing.
I'm the same way. Like, music chose me. I didn't choose it. And that's just how I look at it. It's not anything other than, I feel like this is what I was put here to do.
And you have daughters.
Yes.
Any more? Like, you going to try to get a boy or no?
No, we're done. I went ahead and took care of that.
So, having girls, I mean, that's got to be, it's you and all women. Like, I grew up with all women.
All women. We got two girls, my wife, my dog, and my cat are both girls.
And your animals are all girls.
Yeah.
So, which daughter did you bring up and sing Let It Go?
Presley.
It was Presley,
yeah,
right?
Presley.
Okay, so this is on the show probably a year and a half or so ago. She comes up.
Let go. Let go, can't hold it back anymore. Let go, let go, turn away and slam the door. Here I stand, here I stay. Let the storm rage on. The cold never bothered me anyway.
So, and I still get choked. I remember her singing in the studio.
I hadn't heard that in so long. That's good.
It was so good. And I'm going to tell you now, and we were texting back and forth a couple weeks ago, and you sent me a video of her sing. By the way, she's got some swagger now.
She does.
Like, it looks like that might be what she wants to do.
As bad as I hate to admit it, I think it's chosen her.
She sings and she demands the room.
Yeah.
How old is she now?
She's 8 and a half.
Okay, so she's 8 and a half years old, and so Craig sends me a video, and I look at the video, and I think, this is Craig, my buddy, sending me a video, and I've watched your kids grow up in the last 2 years,
and
so I don't post it anymore or anything, because I think this is just a thing, and then I see other places, because you put it out a couple, I was like, dude, I had to put that out, I thought it was so good.
Yeah, she did a good job.
She did, and it's up on the internet. I ended up not putting it up, because other people have put it up, but if you want to see, you're playing guitar. I mean, your wife.
No, that was Mindy. Mindy was playing guitar.
She was okay. That's what it was.
Yeah.
She was playing guitar and Presley singing. And what was the song she was singing?
Peter Pan.
Kelsey's song, Peter Pan.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I'm just like, man, like, I've watched this girl grow from.
Let go.
She
let
was
go.
In kindergarten, so that was 3 years. Yeah, 3 solid years ago.
You proud?
I'm very proud.
I mean, is it?
Yeah, she's. She's, you know, we get asked all the time if she's going to follow in our steps, because her mom was a great singer too, and if she wants to, but it's up to her. I'm definitely going to make it available for her if she. I'm going to help her out.
Do you teach her music?
We just started last week. And she's got piano lessons. I don't want to teach her.
She sings on on pitch already.
Yeah, her pitch. And listen, I'm bragging, but at the same time, I recognize.
It's also genetic, though, a little, too. I recognize. She's around it, too, as well.
Talent. I mean, her pitch is incredible. Like, sometimes I'm driving down the road in my truck, and she's in the back just doing a cappella stuff, working on licks, doing these Meghan Trainor licks, and I'm like, wow.
Yeah. She, one, gets to be around people who can sing really well, and two, when your parents sing, I mean,
I believe that there's a connection between being in the womb, too. Like, me and Mindy, her mom, had an acoustic gig every Monday at Legends Corner from 2 to 6. And it got to where Mindy was having to hold her guitar sideways for her belly. So the resonation, or the resonance of the guitar on her belly and hearing us sing every Monday, I feel like that had a lot to do with her having music when she was born.
Why does Mindy not play?
She moved to Nashville to pursue music. She, her car didn't get drawn.
Does she still hope?
No, she's okay with it. You know, she, for the longest time, and we wrote songs together. Matter of fact, we had a song together on my second album called Topless. And she is the superwoman of all superwomen. She takes care of them girls. Cause I mean, honestly, when I'm gone, she's a single mom. It's dance, it's school, it's, she trains, you know, so she's happy. She's happy with where her life is. The road has led her. Now she does love music. Don't get me wrong. And we still play as a family. Like we'll play music and we'll sit around the campfire and do stuff. And the occasional songwriters round that she gets invited to, you know, I'll go in, you know, she'll call me up, and it's a lot of fun. I do miss playing just me and her on Lower Broadway.
That what brought you two together?
Yeah. She hired me to play piano for her.
She hired you to play piano.
She was one of my six nights of playing piano.
Man, that's crazy.
And then we've been together ever since.
Are you grateful?
Oh yeah.
Just in general, at this point in your life right now,
as anybody could ever be. I mean, I get frustrated a lot with my line of work, but I still get to wake up knowing that I'm going to go be on a stage and sing country music and get paid to do it. It's a surreal thing.
Right now, his song is Outskirts of Heaven.
Lord, when I die, I want to live on the outskirts of heaven, where there's dirt roads for miles, hay in the fields, and fish in the river, where there's dogwood trees and honeybees and blue skies and green grass forever. Lord, when I die, I want to live on the outskirts of heaven.
And I believe you when you tell me this. I'll say it again, though. I hope that you're so proud of that song, even if it were to stop tomorrow.
Oh, I am. And I tell that every time I'm with anybody, when it comes to me trying to convince them to play the song, I'm like, you know what? If it all went away tomorrow, the messages that I get on Facebook and Twitter and Instagram and all that about how this song has helped them deal with certain situations, that's all that matters to me.
Mike, anything like to ask Craig after the interview? Mike always has a couple questions lingering.
Yeah, well, is your daughter, does she gravitate towards country music?
Oh, no.
Like, what does she want to sing?
She's a huge Meghan Trainor fan.
Which, by the way, Meghan Trainor, heavy country influence.
No, yeah, no doubt.
Like, we talked about, I think last week, like Caitlin Smith was in. And Caitlin and Meghan wrote Meghan Trainor's song.
Like I'm Gonna Lose You.
I'm Gonna Love You Like I'm Gonna Lose You.
That's mine and Presley's most viral video on Facebook.
You two singing that song together.
We did that one together. But yeah, she loves Kelsey. You know, I'm not saying she don't like country music at all.
Right.
She just, her friends, they, you know, they lean more towards pop with the stuff they listen to.
Cool. Is that your first tattoo right there? I've been kind of staring at it the whole
time.
You got
fresh color.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I got, but no, this is my fifth tattoo. But I
Is that? Because the coloring's new on it.
Well, it's an American flag.
Okay.
And I've had it about a month, but I went back and had the red put in the stripes so that it'd be pop a little better.
Looks awesome, man.
So,
anything else, Mike?
What was the first song you learned how to play on guitar?
On guitar?
Yeah.
What was it? Oh, today I started loving you again.
Was that basically G chords and D chords?
D, G, yeah. I'm right back where I've really always been. I got over you just long enough to let my heart ache mend. And today I started loving you again. My uncle was a guitar player. He had a band. They were my mama's brother had a Kiss tribute band. He was a lead guitar player.
Did they put makeup on?
Oh yeah,
they did.
Yeah,
that's cool.
So awesome. That was the very first song I ever learned how to play on acoustic.
I've really enjoyed the chat.
No, I have had a great time.
This is cool. And obviously, you know, I'm a fan and a friend, and not maybe that order. I think but friend first.
I don't know.
Because I think. Yeah, listen. I'd never listen to people. I hate when people bring songs. Go, hey, let me play it for you in front of your face. And I think you're probably the only person I've ever let that happen to in my history. I don't know if you remember coming into the studio.
I do, and I felt bad about
that.
And
I was like, Craig, I don't want to do this. Because I have to do the thing where I have to act like I'm loving it, and I don't know if I want to hear it. And it's just like, oh, you might be the only person I've ever let that happen with. Because I just don't do. I hate it.
Well, I'm glad you did. But at the same time, that was not my idea.
And you know what's funny? You came in with Mary Forrest,
yeah,
who's my manager.
It was
now.
Her idea,
and she's I call her my babysitter because she managed everything that I do, from you know the books and the music and the she. By the way, she's fantastic.
Oh, she's good. I love her to death. I even texted her when she came to work for you guys or for you. I said, I hate to see you go, but I know you're gonna love that gig.
Yeah, she left a really good job working at your label to come and run me.
Oh, and
she's the best human.
Yeah, she's awesome.
Holy crap. I really have enjoyed this talk. It's fun to sit down and just get to talk for an hour and there'd be no rules and just see what comes out. Really? So everybody, if you're listening, you know, and you like it, support it. Spend the $1.29. Outskirts of Heaven.
Lord, when I die, I wanna live on the outskirts of heaven.
Please send all my warmth to the family.
I will, brother. Man. Thank you.
All right, that's Craig Campbell, and that's going to wrap up episode 7 of the Bobbycast, brought to you by No One Yet. We have no sponsor yet. No sponsor. I think they told me I can get one, though, so I need to find a sponsor. They're like, hey, go get one. They can buy a sponsorship. And I was like, dang, already? Like, yeah. So if anyone out there listening wants to be a sponsor of the show, let me know. Mike Destro producing the show. That's MikeDeestro on Snapchat. Now, Craig Campbell is Craig Campbell TV. Why Craig Campbell TV, by the way?
Short story. CraigCampbell.com was taken. CraigCampbell.net was taken. My bigger picture family was already working with Big Kenny at the time, and he had BigKenny.tv, so .tv was available. So my website is CraigCampbell.tv, so then we just made all the social media Craig Campbell TV.
Interesting.
Long story.
Yeah.
Not so short.
I appreciate the time and the look back at the career, and you know I'm always rooting for you.
Dude, I appreciate it.
All right, we'll see you next time. It's the Bobbycast. That's another episode, another edition. Thank you very much, and until next time, goodbye, everybody.